Hey, I'm Michaela Lafrac, the host of Vermont Edition. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Happy listening.
Julia Child, Sylvia Plath, James Beard, John Updike, Anne Frank. What do these authors have in common? Well, their manuscripts were all championed by one legendary editor, Judith Jones. She worked in publishing from the 1940s to 2011 and helped shape and grow the cookbook industry into a respected genre. She also nurtured a diverse cast of authors who might otherwise have gone unnoticed. She split her time between New York and Walden, Vermont. In her later years, she became close with the food writer and historian Sarah Franklin, who joins us today. Franklin received a National Endowment for the Humanities grant for her research on Judith Jones. She teaches courses on food, culture, writing, and oral history at NYU and the Wallkill Correctional Facility through the NYU Prison Education Initiative. Her book is called The Editor: How Publishing Legend Judith Jones Shaped Culture in America. It was published at the end of May. Sarah Franklin, welcome to the show.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Sarah, let's start with the scope of Judith Jones' work. It's rather remarkable. She was at the publishing house, Alfred A. Knopf, for more than 50 years. Who are some of the authors that she worked with?
Yeah, so she began at Knopf in 1957, okay, and she was hired because Blanche Knopf, who was the co-founder of that publishing house in 1915, had very much wanted to publish The Diary of Anne Frank, and her all-male colleagues, one of whom was her husband, Alfred Knopf, had insisted the book would never sell. Well, of course, the record has proven otherwise, and it was Doubleday that published that book at the recommendation of a young Judith Ben Bailey, who was living in Paris at the time, and fished The Diary of Anne Frank out of the reject pile. Her boss there, Francis K. Wow. Price, had already rejected the manuscript, thought also it couldn't sell, and Judith really mounted a convincing case for the book as a remarkable historical and cultural document, but also Anne Frank's voice as singular in that it was reflective of a rather untarnished authorial voice of a young girl, which is something that's very, very rare then and still today in the publishing world, to have that kind of a voice on the page. So it was Blanche Knopf who hired Judith Jones to Knopf in 1957, based sort of on spite against her colleagues. She wanted this young woman full of moxie and foresight on her team. And very quickly, Judith was given some real literary greats to work on under Blanche's guidance that included Langston Hughes, the author John Hersey. Very quickly, John Updike became her author. And within 2 years of being hired at the house, she had brought the poet then still alive, Sylvia Plath, to the United States. She published her first collection of poems, The Colossus, under the Knopf banner, and had also acquired the manuscript that was later called Mastering the Art of French Cooking by Julia Child, Louisette Bertholle, and Simone Beck, which Knopf published in 1961.
Incredible. You had a very close relationship with Judith Jones that in some ways forms the backbone of this book and allowed you access to much of her writing and to her life. When did you and Judith Jones first meet?
Judith and I first met in January of 2013. I had just begun a graduate program in New York City, and I was particularly interested in oral history, which is sort of a form of collecting interviews to enhance the archival written record as a way to better our understanding of history and lived experiences of history in particular. And the Julia Child Foundation, in a great move of foresight, recognized when Judith Jones went to retire from Knopf in 2011 that she had been a giant in American publishing, particularly in terms of her contribution to the culinary world and the cookbooks that she worked on. And so they had written to a woman who happened to be a professor of mine at the Columbia Center for Oral History, asking for help in starting an oral history project of Judith. Long story short, I was hired to run that project. And so I was sent to Judith's home in January of 2013 to meet her and see if we would get along well enough to work together over a period of months. And we sort of hit it off right away. We had a great deal in common in terms of our worldview, our sense that food and cooking should really first and foremost supposed to be about pleasure and also an exploration of culture, that it was not something to be seen as domestic drudgery, but could really be an expression of creativity, artistry, and empowerment. Judith really had a sort of alternative vision of feminism that I really strongly connected with. And so we began our interviews together in the spring of 2013, first at her apartment in Manhattan in New York City. She then lived in the same building that she was born and raised in 1924. But then later, when our work together wasn't complete, she invited me up to her home where she spent the summer months and had since 1980 on the side of a mountain in Walden, Vermont. And we always spent our sessions together that always began with cooking lunch. Judith was the queen of cookbooks, but we never used recipes. We sort of riffed together. We often used leftovers. And that was really how we got to know each other. And I think it's how Judith began to trust me. She was really sussing out my character. She watched how I moved and thought and was able to improvise in the kitchen. It really gave her a sense of who I was and deepened our rapport over a period of months. After she died in 2017, we had remained friends after our work together ended. Her stepdaughter, Bronwyn Dunn, who lives in South Burlington, invited me to Judith's memorial service and said, "I've just begun to go through the apartment in New York City, and there's an awful lot of stuff there. Would you like to maybe come and have a look and help me make sense of it?" And so I said yes. And 2 months later, I was standing back in that Manhattan apartment, and Bronwyn had opened the door to literally two rooms full of archival material dating back to the 1930s, handwritten letters, photographs, journals, marked up manuscripts, and the like that made up the entirety of Judith Jones's personal archive. And I was given this incredible gift of access. So I both knew her personally and had our wonderful conversations and interviews together, but I also had access to who she was across her lifetime based on written materials and photographs that had never before been seen by an historian.
Mm. Well, as you mentioned, Judith Jones passed away in 2017 at the age of 93 at her home in the Northeast Kingdom. Her whole life was in some ways defined by these different types of ties she had to Vermont, starting out as a young child. Tell us about her earliest ties to Vermont.
Yeah, Vermont was incredibly important to Judith. Both of her parents actually met on the shores of Caspian Lake in Greensboro. And so it was part of their origin story as well. And Judith grew up visiting her grandparents on the shores of Caspian Lake, swimming in that lake. But more regularly, and as she told it, more influential to her was on her father's side. Her entire family was from Montpelier and was a really prominent family in the city. Bailey Avenue there is named after her father's side of the family. And she really admired her grandmother, Fanny Bailey, on that side, who was a woman of incredible, upstanding character, but also full of mischief, which is a really excellent way to describe Judith's personality as well. Judith was so interested in living with that grandmother and learning from her way of being a woman in the world that she mounted a case for her towards her parents when she was 11 years old to go spend a year going to public school there after she flunked the entrance exam for a prominent private school in New York City. She said to her parents, "Listen, you'll save a year's worth of tuition. I'll go get my grades up and then I'll come back and take the exam again." But what she was most interested in was getting away from her very buttoned up waspy mother in New York and going to spend time with her grandmother in Vermont, who Judith described as very free, very committed to working towards social good, but also who really believed in pleasure and exploration of the world. So that was a really important component of Judith's ties to Vermont. She then went to Bennington College in 1941, which was an incredibly formative period of time for her during the years of World War II. The Bennington College at the time had one of the largest victory gardens. In their case, it was a victory farm that Judith and all the other students there were compelled to work on as part of the curriculum at the time. Some of Judith's professors even taught classes in the fields. And so for her, that was an early connection between the production of food and her interest in eating food, which was something quite rare in the 1940s, especially for a girl who'd grown up in a wealthy white family in New York City. There was not a lot of sense of what it meant to get food on the table. And then she and the man who became her husband, Evan Jones, spent a great deal of time with Judah's family in Vermont over the years. But it was in 1980 when they were really looking to find a place of their own, both to work. He was a freelance writer and she was beginning to work on some of her own cookbooks. They wrote cookbooks together, but also to have some privacy. They found this quirky little house on the side of the mountain in Walden that they ended up buying and naming Bryn Teg, which means beautiful hill in Welsh. Judah's husband was from a Welsh family. And it became Judah's sort of most sacred place. It was a place she really began to consider and explore the connections between the natural world and food, but also the changing climate, American politics, the sort of ways in which capitalist consumerism was speeding up, and it allowed her a place in which to kind of resist that through daily practices of connecting with the natural world, growing her own food, learning more about things that grew wild, and all the creatures that she was surrounded by there. So Vermont was tremendously important to who she was as a person, but also who she was as an editor.
Mm. Yes, let's talk a bit more about that. As you've said, her life in Vermont also shaped some of her work, including witnessing, if not being a part of, the Back to the Land movement in the late 60s and early 70s. And at that time, as many of our listeners will remember, there was a tremendous surge in interest in sort of natural things, from organic gardening to forage, just being closer to the land. And Judith Jones wanted to do a book that channeled that interest. And she found her author through Bennington College's alumni magazine. Could you tell us a little bit about Kit Foster and the book that she worked on with Judith?
Absolutely. So Catherine Osgood Foster, who went by Kit, was a longtime English professor, really revered English professor at Bennington College. And she had actually taught Judith there in the 1940s. And so the two knew one another a little bit. But come to the late 1960s, early 1970s, as you said, Judith was observing this beginning of a real emergence of counterculture that was interested in using sustainable agriculture and communal subsistence living as a means to make a political statement. And so in her very Judith Jones way, she began looking through all kinds of regional publications to try to find an author who was already tapped in to that experience and that community, who might be able to put together a book to teach a readership about that way of living, thinking, and doing. And so she actually read an article in the Bennington newspaper that sort of reminded her of who Catherine Osgood Foster was. At the time, Foster was writing a regular column about organic gardening for the Bennington newspaper. And Judith wrote to her out of the blue, they hadn't been in touch in almost 30 years, and said, listen, I think it might be really interesting for you to be the sort of voice through which we talk about this movement. And Kit Foster, to her credit, remembered Judith right away and said, oh, yes, there have been so many changes among the young people up here in Vermont. And I would love to work on a book that both instructs readers about how they might do some of this themselves, grow some of their own food without the use of chemical pesticides, but also that really articulates an autonomous political movement that goes against the kind of commercialization of big agriculture and the mechanization, the depersonalization of our food system.
But the writing process didn't go completely smoothly, right?
That's right. Kit Foster, like many academics, had a hard time writing for a popular audience. She tended to be long-winded. She tended to do perhaps more explaining than your average reader might have the patience to read. And so the two, Judith and Kit, worked back and forth. Kit would send in her chapters, and Judith would really encourage her to try to make it sound more colloquial, to make the language sound more accessible to a general audience that wasn't necessarily looking for a technical manual or an academic treatise, but was looking to read the book as a book in which they might pick up some gardening tips, but where they could also learn things in language and a kind of storytelling that was really accessible to a general public.
Mm. We have about a minute left. Sarah Franklin, what is one thing that you miss the most about your friend and your subject, Judith Jones?
Her incredible comfort and kind of wild whimsy that I experienced most with her in Vermont, her just ability to inhabit the world fully and centrally, particularly as a woman in America, I think is a very rare thing. And I learned a great deal from her in how she modeled that for me.
Mm. Sarah Franklin is a food writer and a historian. Her new book is called The Editor: How Publishing Legend Judith Jones Shaped Culture in America. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on this book.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure it's been to be here.